Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're taking a close look at something pretty complex, the ransomware economy.
Yeah, it's really shifted, hasn't it?
It really has. Forget that old image of some lone hacker in a basement. This is, well, it's basically a multi-billion dollar illicit industry now.
Absolutely. Operating like a real corporation. Think sales, R&D, they even have customer support, bizarrely enough.
Right. So our mission today is to try and unpack how this whole professional cybercrime ecosystem actually works. Because, understanding it is really the first step if you want to defend against it effectively.
Couldn't agree more.
Okay, so let's unpack this. When we say a corporate business model for cybercrime, what does that actually look like on the ground?
Well, the big thing is ransomware as a service. RACE.
RACE, like SaaS, software as a service, but for crime.
Exactly. And that model, it drastically lowers the barrier to entry. You don't need to be some elite coder anymore to launch a really damaging attack.
So it opens the door for more criminals.
Precisely. And what's really interesting is the specialization, the division of labor. It's quite clear-cut.
Like in a regular company.
Very much so. You've got the RAAS operators. They're the ones developing the actual ransomware software and running the back-end infrastructure.
Okay, the product development team.
Sort of, yeah. Then you have the affiliates. They're the ones on the front lines, deploying the attacks, dealing with the
Just
victims.
sales and operations guys.
You could say that. And there's this crucial newer role, initial access brokers, IABs.
IABs, what do they do?
These guys specialize in just one thing, breaking into networks. Once they're in, they don't deploy ransomware themselves. They sell that access to an affiliate.
Wow. So they just find the open door and sell the key.
That's a good way to put it. It's created this whole gig economy for cybercrime. Makes attacks faster, more widespread.
Any idea what that access costs?
Yeah, the figures are pretty specific. Access using something like Remote Desktop Protocol, RDP, that can go for around, say, $9,800. Stolen login credentials, maybe average about $700 or $100.
Not insignificant. And the affiliates, what's their cut?
They usually keep the lion's share, typically 70, maybe 80% of the final ransom payment.
A gig economy for crime. That's efficient, but pretty chilling.
It is.
So, okay, if these affiliates aren't necessarily the top-tier coders, how do they manage to pull off these really damaging attacks? What's the playbook look like?
It's surprisingly consistent, actually. A lot of the time, that initial way in, the initial access, it's often phishing.
Still fishing
Yeah.
after all this time.
Still phishing. Accounts for maybe 37% of attacks. Or compromised credentials, that's another big one, about 23%. You'd have to look at the Change Healthcare attack. Massive impact, right? And it reportedly started with a single user account that didn't have multi-factor authentication enabled.
Just one account. Wow. Okay, so they get in through phishing or stolen credentials. Then what?
Then they often try to blend in. They use something called living off the land tools, LOTO.
Living off the land. Meaning.
Using tools that are already on the victim's system. Legitimate tools like PowerShell, which is a standard Windows scripting tool, or maybe Mimikatz. That one's well known for grabbing passwords out of memory.
Ah, so because they're using legitimate tools, traditional security software might not flag it as suspicious.
Exactly. It makes detection much harder. And this contributes to something really worrying. The dwell time.
The time they're inside the network before anyone notices.
Yeah. Globally, that's now down to just 10 days on average.
10 days, that's not a lot of time to catch them.
Not at all. You have very little window to detect and respond before serious damage is done.
And we know the damage isn't just financial anymore, is it? What's the broader impact we're seeing?
Well, this really raises the question of the human toll, which often gets overlooked. Take the attack by the Quillen Group on Synovus. They provide pathology services to major hospitals in London.
I remember reading about that. Huge disruption.
Huge. And tragically, it was linked to, I think, 170 cases of patient harm. Even one patient death was attributed to the delays and disruption caused by the attack.
That's awful. It really drives home that this isn't just about data or money.
Absolutely. It shows that defending against these attacks isn't just about protecting the bottom line anymore. It's literally about preventing human harm in some cases.
That Synovus case is a really stark reminder. So faced with this professional adaptive adversary, what does it mean for us? How do we even begin to build a professional defense?
Well, connecting it all together, I think there needs to be a bit of a mindset shift. We need to move beyond just looking for indicators of compromise or IOCs.
IOCs, like specific malware file hashes or IP addresses, like looking for a known getaway car's license plate.
Exactly like that. Those are useful, but attackers change them constantly. We need to focus more on understanding their tactics, techniques, and procedures, their TTPs.
TTP. So not just the license plate, but how the criminal drives, the routes they take, their whole method.
Precisely. Their patterns of behavior. Those are much harder for them to change quickly. It's about understanding the adversary, not just the tool.
So shifting focus to TTPs. Okay. Does that mean our old tools are useless?
Oh, no, not at all. It's about adding layers. Using this understanding of TTPs to make your existing defenses and your security team more proactive, better at hunting.
So for an organization listening right now, what are the foundational steps? Where do they start building that more robust defense?
It really boils down to getting the fundamentals right, because even these sophisticated groups exploit basic weaknesses. First, prioritize basic security hygiene. That means things like rigorously enforcing multi-factor authentication. Everywhere possible.
Like the Change Healthcare example showed us.
Yes. MFA could have potentially stopped that one right at the start. Second, implement a zero trust model.
Zero trust, meaning basically trust no one and nothing by default. Verify everything.
That's the core idea. Don't assume trust just because something or someone is already inside your network perimeter. Verify constantly.
Okay. MFA, zero trust. What else?
Proactively hunt for those living off the land tools being misused. You can't just rely on automated alerts. You need people actively looking for unusual uses of legitimate tools.
Human expertise is key.
Absolutely. And tied to that, your human firewall, your staff. They need to be well-trained, constantly aware. Phishing still works because humans click links. That healthcare breach you mentioned also highlighted vulnerabilities there.
Right. And what about newer tech, AI?
Well, AI is interesting. It's becoming an arms race. Attackers are using it to create much more convincing phishing emails, for example. But defenders are also using AI for more advanced, earlier detection of threats. So it cuts both ways.
A double-edged sword. Anything else critical?
Yes, actually. Reporting incidents to law enforcement, it might seem counterintuitive if you've just been hit, but it could be a really significant mitigating factor, especially if U.S. Treasury sanctions come into play. You know, OFAC has sanctions against paying ransoms to certain designated threat groups. Reporting shows you're cooperating.
That's a really important practical point. Okay, so we've taken quite a deep dive today into this professionalized ransomware economy. We've looked at its structure, this RENES model, the affiliate playbook, and crucially, how defense needs to adapt.
It's a complex, fast-moving threat landscape.
It really is. So for you, the listener, maybe a final thought to chew on. We're in this high-stakes game, right? Cybercrime is a business. Defense is this constant arms race. Does the future of cybersecurity, you think, hinge as much on our ability to predict human behavior, both the attackers and our own peoples, as it does on just having the latest technological safeguards?
That's a deep question.
Probably.
Something to think about. Stay curious, stay critical, and stay ahead.